You're listening to Golden State of Mindcast. Ivan here with Brim. Nate is on assignment, resting up before the big game one, which is happening in the next couple days, depending on when you're listening to this, on Thursday. We finally are there. We're finally done with these kind of, well, I don't know if it's been a grueling playoffs, and that's certainly something that we can talk about, since there has definitely been some concern that these playoffs weren't super exciting, and that the Warriors and the Cavs are to blame for that. But let's get into that in just a minute. Bram, how are you doing today?
I'm good. I'm doing you know, I can say the word good again twice. Good. I'm doing pretty good. So yeah, thanks.
The ratings for these playoffs have been great. No complaints there. But it does seem like generally the consensus has been that the playoffs are lackluster, and you know, not a lot of intrigue and interesting games happening. Does that make any sense? Like, if the ratings are good and the fans are watching it, like, are the playoffs really bad, or
people
are we?
People love to hate good things. So, like, basically, anytime that something is fun and enjoyable and, like, is yearning towards goodness and sort of like a more pure sort of sensibility, people will try to tear that thing down. Which is, and they'll love watch it or hate watch it or whatever, you know. So, like, people love to hate watch the Warriors, even as they go, you know, going towards 16-0, going towards, you know, potentially 16-0. Obviously, I don't think that's actually going to happen. But, like, people, you know, if there's one thing I've learned in the course of this NBA season, is that I don't trust people.
Well, I learned that, yeah, the hard way over the last couple of years. Definitely the last, you know, since November. I think you're right. I think there's a little bit of that. People do hate watch. I kind of have another sense, is that, like, you know, I haven't heard from any fans that, like, oh, these playoffs suck, they're boring. Like, I don't hear that from fans. I hear it from writers, you know?
Totally. Like, and I think that's your point, is that, you know, there's a very loud, vocal sort of minority, but they are the majority on Twitter or on social media or in the sort of, you know, in the ways in which you read about basketball online. And maybe actually honestly, like, a lot of the fans just in general are actually super stoked about the fact that the Warriors are playing the Cavaliers for the third time in a row. And honestly, like, I'm part of that crew as well. And I know that I'm biased as a Warriors fan, but I mean, I've written about this extensively, but like, why wouldn't you want to see the two best teams, the two obvious best teams in the league, play each other for the third straight year? I mean, would you rather see, like, Clippers Toronto or something? Or would you rather see, you know, Jazz Washington? I mean, like, none of those matchups are nearly as compelling as the Warriors Cavaliers, and yet everybody, people love to complain, man. That's the thing. Like, well, people love to hate watch thing, and people love to complain.
I mean, I think people, the writers, and journalists and bloggers are probably, you know, happy with the outcome of having the Warriors and Cavs in the finals. But in the path to get there is kind of the contentious thing, because it hasn't been super competitive across the board. Although, it's just reading an article from Bleacher Report. And it was, you know, they make some interesting points. They definitely also make the point that, they attempted to make the point that the you know, people are saying that these have been a boring playoffs, and then they just quote a whole bunch of writers. So that is kind of along the same line, but they also make the point that, you know, for everything that people are talking about, these, you know, blowouts being a problem, and, you know, lack of games and everything, it's not that different. Right, there aren't that many more blowouts. In some cases, there have been less this year than in other years. It's like, you know, it's it's just kind of the you know, today's perception that like, oh, this is super boring and compared to other years prior. And it's just not really the case.
I just don't think it's not the case statistically. It's not the case actually if you open your eyes and watch the games. I mean, and this is something, I mean, both teams are playing at such a high level right now that, you know, we haven't really seen them challenged. And so, for example, the Cavs took off the regular season. Like, they didn't really apply themselves at all. And as evidenced by the fact that they didn't give a shit about the one seed or the two seed, and they immediately wrested back home court advantage in game one of the Eastern Conference Finals against Boston, which was kind of hilarious. It's like, oh yeah, wait, like, why did you play 82 games if they just turn on a switch and just blow them out in game one? But, and the same can sort of be said with the Warriors, you know, other than really in game one of the Western Conference Finals, when the Spurs went up so big, you know, unfortunately then with a Kawhi injury, they weren't tested again after that, and hadn't really been tested before that so much. And so both of these teams, it's like, it's so hard to sort of game plan what the finals are going to look like, because neither of the teams have truly been tested. But I think that's also a testament to the teams themselves, and the fact that we've sort of all been looking towards this matchup as like the destined matchup of the 2017 NBA Finals, is that like the only teams that can truly test them, that, you know, like, are, they are the only two teams who can really bring out the best in one another. And they're completely indifferent to sort of like rising to the challenge in any other situation, because it's not really maybe like worth their time or worth the effort that it would take to like give 110%. And so now I feel like they've both been playing with an eye towards this specific matchups, even since game seven of last year, really, or maybe more specifically since, you know, Kevin Durant got signed. And now, you know, we'll see what happens, but they, you know, we're finally here. It's the thing that we all thought was going to happen is actually happening. And I feel like, you know, I don't even know what the Warriors are capable of, even though they've been winning with like a plus 15.5 differential or whatever it's been. And they've gone 20, whatever it is, in 26-1 since Clay signed the toaster, or since they played San Antonio, or whatever that marker is that I can't remember off the top of my head right now. But, you know, it's ridiculous. And both teams are really, you know, they're built to play each other. And I wouldn't say that the playoffs have been a wash. I wouldn't say that they've been a waste, but it's definitely, this is the outcome that we deserve. And this is the outcome that fortunately we're going to get. And I honestly can't wait to see what happens.
Yeah, absolutely. It's funny because I think that a lot of fans but obviously writers as well, like we kind of talked about this, and we've talked about this for the last couple of years when we come on these podcasts, and we're like, man, there's not a lot to actually write about the Warriors, because there's not enough drama. You know, they just blow out teams and you kind of expect it, and then when they lose, there's some obvious reason, but it's never you know, there's just not a lot of drama, and there's not a lot of like underdog intrigue. And I think that we like to write about and read about, like, you know, underdog stories, you know, somebody playing a hero, a little, you know, to Goliath, playing little David, and we didn't, there was just not, there were plenty of underdogs, and they were just getting, you know, swept off the floor, in the regular playoffs. But before this finals, obviously. And so now we're here, we're at the finals, and there's no underdog. Like, there's two, you know, heavy hitters that, you know, one is a defending champ and the other one had added another MVP to their roster. Right. So, and now we have like that very thing, looking for that narrative of who the underdog is in this matchup, because there has to be one, and the Cavs are kind of being positioned as that, which is crazy, because they are also, people kind of forget this, I think, that like we talk about this as just LeBron versus this cabal of superstars on the Warriors, and it's like, man, they are stacked. Like the Cavs also are a cabal of superstars. They have a deep bench. They have multiple all-stars. multiple, you know,
Kyrie's balling out right now, man.
And he's playing great basketball. Kevin Love is playing his best basketball probably since he's been on the Cavs. Like the way he's fitting into their system right now makes a lot more sense. To the degree where it's not a 2015 thing where we look at, I think a lot of us looked at Kevin Love as a defensive liability that wasn't going to match up really well against the Warriors. And so him being out maybe ended up helping them because they got to play Tristan Thompson a lot more. But now he's like, you know, he's somebody that the Warriors are going to have to figure out. And they're going to have to figure out how to contain Kyrie and contain all the 3-point shooting that they're doing now. They're shooting more threes in the playoffs than the Warriors. The higher percentage of their points are coming from the 3-point line. But still, like, they're the defending champions, and they got better too. So the positioning of the Cavs as the underdogs against the Warriors is, I mean, it makes sense, but it's kind of crazy.
So yeah, one of our writers was tweeting this. I think it was Hugo Kitano, and I forget which game it was, but he had this pretty hilarious tweet that he said, you know, 2015 was a new hope, 2016 was the Empire Strikes Back, and 2017 ? Was like the Return of the Jedi. And we got so much, both like obviously Warriors fans who have been there since the beginning were all about this tweet. I mean, it was literally, it was one of our like best, most favorited, most retweeted tweets of the year. But there were so many people who literally their reaction was, what do you, including like good friends of ours who are national writers, like Zito Madu and some other guys, like, they're like, what are you talking about? The Warriors are the Empire. And it's just so far out of my personal wheelhouse to even be able to think about the Warriors as being this, you know, Death Star wielding evil empire, because of the fact of what we've gone through in our lives with them being horrible. And, you know, you talk about there being favorites in the series and that the Cavs are sort of the underdogs, and they have this sort of like, you know, the quote unquote, like the people are voting for the Cavaliers to win because they want them to like stick it to the man, and like they want the underdog to come from behind, and the whole 3-1 narrative and everything. It's like, James is legitimately the best player to ever play the sport of basketball. And I know that like I hold that opinion, but that also, if he's not number one, he's number two maybe, or three, behind like obviously behind MJ, but then maybe behind like Bill Russell or whoever. Like, it's like somewhere in that, like, definitely top five, definitely top four, probably top three, and for me, like top one, maybe top two. They're kind of going back and forth, right? But it's like, how are the Warriors the evil empire going up against the best basketball player of all time at the tail end of his prime, but still in his prime? I mean, you know, I saw this really interesting video on Fear the Swords Facebook page that I reposted on our Facebook page, but it was just kind of comparing, you know, MJ versus LeBron at age 32. And it's just, it's really interesting. Like, you forget that MJ only had 3 finals wins and 3 finals appearances at age 32. And you forget that, you know, like LeBron also has 3 finals wins and 3 finals MVPs at age 32. And you forget that, you know, MJ languished in not obscurity. Like, he already had 10, you know, NBA All-Star appearances and everything by that time, but just that he hadn't made it out of the first round a couple times. Like, it took a long time for them to sort of like assume their throne. And I wonder, and again, that's like a separate conversation, but I wonder how much further LeBron is going to go from this point onwards. Like, can he keep up this level? Can he do, like, is he going to come up against the Warriors 4, 5, 6 times in a row in the finals? I mean, it that's how it seems like it's playing out. And how do we look at his career after this? But at the same time, I mean, again, I know I'm biased because I know I grew up a Warriors fan and everything, and I know they got Kevin Durant, and I know everything is happening. But you look at this Warriors team; it's like it's hard for me in the national spectrum of how people are talking about this series to really think about the fact that people think of the Warriors as the enemy. It's, well, I mean, like, or that they're thinking about the Warriors at all. Yeah, it's just, it's weird.
Well, the, another thing that people kind of don't talk about or seem to forget is that the other than Kevin Durant, which and maybe Kevin Durant is you know Vader or whatever in this scenario, but everybody else, like almost everybody else, came here through the draft. You know, their core is a homegrown team. It's
except
like
for Iguodala, and then like you know the. Like David West and those kind of
well, sure, the
David yeah, all those guys, but like, yeah, that I mean, out of the four All Stars,
the core,
it yeah. is the only, you know, free agent.
Right, right, and well, and then Durant coming, and so I guess Iguodala, that's a good point. That's certainly a factor there. And LeBron is homegrown in Cleveland, but he left, and then he came back when there was a you know going to be an opportunity to rebuild that. That opportunity there, that team to championship contender. So, I mean, I'm not saying that they're, you know, they went and like, you know, bought a bunch of pieces. This is not a Boston Celtics situation where they, you know, went from kind of a, you know, obscure low level playoff team to all of a sudden they just like, you know, managed to go out and get, you know, two of the best, you know, players at all at once and then win a championship because of that. So, you know, I don't know. I just kind of feel like they deserve a little bit more. Myers deserves a little bit more credit in the organization overall.
I just want to say that people are petty as hell, man. It's like that Celtics team is a really good example, right? So people adore that Celtics team, and specifically people in Boston, a lot of whom are the people who are like giving Katie a bunch of crap for coming to Golden State. And it's like they went out and got Ray Allen and Kevin Garnett. And they brought those guys in, and it was all of a sudden a super team. And then for whatever reason, because it's Boston and because they have this like irrational pride in the fact that they have 17 championships and all this stuff, it's like, well, that was cool. Like they cared about basketball, but then KD decides to go somewhere else. And like, that's not okay. And at the same time, these are the same people who are like definitely talking shit about LeBron when he went to Miami and the whole debacle that was the decision, and that for whatever reason now, like that's forgiven because he came home and like we're not going to talk about that anymore, and how that was actually like in the sort of national spectrum, that was like much more disturbing the force, so to speak, if we're still talking about Star Wars. That like did definitely like LeBron going to Miami definitely was a much more rupturous disturbance in the forest than Durant coming to Golden State. But people are petty and people have short imaginations and like tiny brains, and they just like get mad about whatever the thing is that they see on the internet. And right now it's the Warriors are evil, and you know,
and this is probably just our problem too, because we as Warrior fans, this is our first time being in this position for this long, where it's like, oh, now everybody hates our team when you know for so long nobody even knew we existed. So it, you know, that maybe this just happens to teams that succeed to this degree, the pettiness comes out, and we're also in a different age accessibility of speech via Twitter and Facebook and the other internets and things. You know, we're hearing more of it than maybe anybody did 10 years ago for sure. So, it just comes with the territory probably. You know, hell with it. Like the Warriors tried to embrace the villain role early on in the season. Didn't really stick.
Yeah, but they're all such
like who cares?
Stupid, great. Sort of corny, like family dude guys that like they're like their thing of like being villains and supervillains was to like have a like house party and get a bunch of balloons that said like supervillains or whatever it is that it said. And it's like, yeah, that's not how, like, if you actually want to do that, you have to like sneer at people and like be mad and mean. And instead they're like, hey, you want to come over and like eat some cake and blow up some balloons and we'll take a drone picture. Like, they're so bad at being villains. Like, they're trying to be villains and they can't even get that right.
Yeah, because I don't even think they're trying anymore. I mean, that now it's so clear that it's just about winning the championship. Oh, and it always was, but like that we have to move on from all that, because it's like now it's just about the ring. And I think that they all accept that. And I'm super happy that we're at that stage of, of the playoffs and of the season, because now it's like, okay, finally, let's just yeah, play this out, and everybody's focused. There are definitely some storylines still to talk about too with that team. Like we've got Mike Brown coaching the finals again, coming back and now coaching against Cleveland instead of for them for all those years ago. And Steve Kerr being out, which is really going to be can be a factor one way or the other. And I'm super interested to see how that plays out, because there's definitely a lot of cons to it, but there might be some pros too.
There's definitely going to be a lot of pros if they do win the championship, in that I'm going to write like 3 or 4 2,000 word pieces.
Lots of pros.
And I'm just going to prose the shit out of the whole thing about how Steve Kerr is the best of all time, but that he was like the man behind the mask, a la Leonardo DiCaprio, or also like the wizard in the behind the curtain, a la
Wizard of Oz. As long as you don't bring my name into it again, trying to claim that I don't even know remember what the claim was, but on some podcast I talked about Kerr's legacy and how he was actually a bad coach, and like somehow people thought that I liked Mark Jackson better than Steve Kerr.
No, I mean I phrased that.
You guys need to listen to these podcasts.
It put you in a really bad light, and I'm not ashamed of that, because you definitely used the word optics enough times that it made me sad. And so then I just decided to make some sort of, you know,
I'm not proud.
I made some questionable
either.
Decisions.
I'm not. You know, proud
I mean, you're
either.
Not. You're not proud of it. I'm proud of the fact that people are still jumping in your mentions a month and a half later, with like getting so mad about something that you actually didn't say, but that I kind of like inferred that you said.
Yeah.
So I stand by that. I think that that's, you know, that's what we do here at GSOM. We just throw each other under the bus. So
right.
Yeah,
but you know Mike Brown's not going to throw Kerr under the bus or vice versa. So the thing I'm interested to see, and you know, I'm concerned that, you know, he is potentially not the degree of a tactician as Kerr is, or what have you. Kerr is around, and so at least he's there to kind of give the bits of wisdom that he is so good at just like pulling out from, you know, on a game to game basis. He sees what he sees and calls it like he does, and then gives that information to his players in a way that they can really be inspired by it and understand kind of where he's coming from. It's hard to tell to what extent Mike Brown has that same ability, because we just aren't there and don't hear the stories so much. But one thing that Mike does seem to do a little more is ride his stars. And you know, when KD has gotten isolated in these playoffs on somebody and you know scores, and they keep milking him and going back to that matchup, and not so much, you know, he hasn't like got, you know, tunnel vision with Steph or with KD or with anybody. He has like gone to it, and then he goes away from it before they get stagnant, which is great. But you know, I think that a lot of us still have a little bit of a, you know, shell shock from last year, where, you know, the when you are expecting to have like a 7-man, 8-man rotation, Kerr is throwing Anderson Varejão and Festus Ezeli in the game in Game 7, and like, you know, to a degree probably lost the game for them. and so I think that Mike Brown is a little less strength and numbers oriented than Kerr is, and I think that might play to the Warriors' advantage if he sticks to his guns in that respect.
I definitely agree with you. I also think that Mike Brown doesn't have the opportunity to put Anderson Varejão or Festus Ezeli into this game.
Yeah, thank you, Bob Myers.
Thank you, Bob Myers. So Bob Myers was like, no. Like, let's not give Kerr the option to even think about that.
And it's not like James Michael McAdoo's been getting a ton of minutes, such that he's going to be like a go-to, you know, finger point for Brown.
I would trust James Michael McAdoo more than I'd trust Varejão at this point. I mean, I'm
at this point, of course, Varejão might be in a grave somewhere.
That's dark.
That's really dark. Sorry. Sorry to the Varejão family. He actually quite enjoyed your career.
I mean, he might not be in the league. I agree with that. He definitely is not in the league. But I think that James Michael McAdoo has a lot to offer playing garbage minutes as the Warriors sweep. All right. So here's like my ideal situation. And I know we'll get to this in a second, but my ideal situation, and this is so arrogant, and but I don't care, is that I want James Michael McAdoo playing the entire fourth quarter of game four en route to a four game sweep that they win like all four games by 25, 35 points.
That sounds great. I'm in. Let's do it.
Yeah. I mean, that would be like, I don't really think that that would make up for 3-1. I think that really they'd have to win another two or three over the next like 3 or 4 years. But I think that that would definitely go a long way. Like if they just decimate the Cavs, that would be pretty cool.
Yeah.
That being said, I don't think that's actually going to happen.
Man, I've had a dark thought. I didn't want to put this in an article that I wrote that came out yesterday, but I'm going to put it out here because hopefully nobody's listening. the idea that like what can the Warriors do to kind of shift the mental approach that people are having going into this game? So we see you know, the Warriors lost 2016 finals. And then they go out and get Kevin Durant, and now they're this unstoppable juggernaut that kind of cheated the system and like didn't come back with the team that won 2015. So they won 2015, they lost 2016, and they didn't want to go again, right? And go for the third time to charm matchup and break the tie. Instead, they went in and got Kevin Durant. So it kind of and that's fine. Like, I totally understand why people would have that narrative. Like, that's the reason why they're the villains, because they didn't didn't stick with the team that they had. They went and got reinforcements, and I totally understand that. But But the thing that worries me, like so even if they win, you know, it's like an illegitimate win to a degree, because you know they won because they have another MVP. Like, of course they're supposed to win. The only way that's not going to be the narrative is if for some reason Kevin Durant doesn't play and they still win, which would be like, Kevin Durant to win, yeah. But like that would be a crazy situation if.
But
like,
see, I think that my thought that, so I mean, Durant is going to stick around. Like, he's already said as much, that he and Iguodala and Draymond and Clay and Curry, like, they want to create the next sort of core, much like what the Spurs had over the last 15 years, as you know, like according to a bunch of different reports. If they stick around and then they win like three or four titles in the next 4, 5, 6 years, I think that that's an incredibly different conversation. And I think that the way that people think about the Warriors right now is out the window, because then all of a sudden you're talking about dynasty in a much, even almost as big of a sort of a way as you're talking about the Bulls dynasty of the 90s and all that stuff. Yeah. But
no, I totally agree. I mean, I think that right now, I tried to make this point in something I wrote, that right now this is the LeBron James era, and this is why it's the era, because it's not yet the Warriors era. Like, it would have been if they won last year, it would have been the start of what you're talking about, where you're like, okay, damn, they won two in a row, and then they've got 2017, and then like, how many in a row can they win? And instead, LeBron snatched that from them. And it was,
Ivan, you should personally be bowing down and thanking LeBron for winning that title, because it really drove Harrison Barnes out of Golden State.
I mean, light years, but, listen,
it would be great. You should write him a letter or something and be like, thank you.
Well, if some GoldenStateOfMind.com fans think that me and you are his biggest fan club members and write letters to him every day.
Us?
So, yeah.
Harrison Barnes?
No, LeBron. You said I should thank LeBron for driving.
No. I thought you were saying that they think that we're big Harrison Barnes fans.
Oh, no. I don't think anybody thinks that.
No. I mean, maybe me a little bit, because I'm just trying to be nice. I want everybody to be happy.
We all see what, you know, it's all devil's advocate when you say it. Like, it's not really believable.
What, about Harrison Barnes?
Yeah. That you're some sort of HB fan for life.
I mean, listen. I will say this. I know it's not a popular opinion on our website that we help run, but like, I am. Honestly, I'm a huge LeBron James fan, and just because we've never seen anything quite like this, And I know that like Warriors fans are salty as heck, and they're talking about the flop and you know the balls and kicking and game five and Kiki Vanderweg and all this stuff. But like, I mean,
That's all fine. That's all like fun and games for fans, and they should do that.
Right,
and, like,
totally. But the same people who are getting like hella salty about game five and you know 3-1 and from a Warriors standpoint are also the people who are like, you know, like never willing to even enter into the question of like, is LeBron ever going to pass MJ? And again, maybe it's a stupid conversation and maybe we're all wasting our time, but it's like, well, if we're wasting our time talking about that, then we're wasting our time talking about like anything really. Like we're wasting our time talking about, is this Warriors team one of the best teams of all time? Which I think it is. And I think that last year, even though they didn't win, like obviously they had, you know, 73-9, they were, you know, provably like one of the best teams in the history of the regular season at the very least. And if Steph doesn't get hurt and all that stuff. And again, then you get into all the, like, if, you know, if Draymond didn't, you know, kick a bunch of dudes in the nuts and if Kiki didn't get involved and, but I don't, it's such a funny thing. And honestly, that's why I think that this finals is one of the most evocative, like one of the most, interesting, one of the most sort of like, there's so many storylines because of the fact that the teams have played each other now 2 years in a row and going on three. And you can't tell me that you're bored, because if you remember any of the shit that happened in any of the other series, like, I mean, the first series was not super interesting. It was amazing for Warriors fans because they won and they had never won. And it was the first time
they did go down 2-1 and Kerr had to switch it up dramatically with the starting lineup. I mean, there was some intrigue there for sure.
Right. And that was the beginning of sort of the death lineup and all of that stuff. Right. So there was a lot of intrigue. You know, I'd say that last year's series, even from a Warriors standpoint, that it was really tough because they lost. But last year's series was one of the most hard fought, best played, most intriguing, like deep series that I've ever seen in the finals for sure. I mean, like, of course you want to see a final series just as a basketball fan go seven games. And for the way that it ended with Kyrie hitting that shot and LeBron with a chase down block and, you know, the Warriors being up 3-1 and just everything that happened is just, it was an amazing series, and it sucked that the Warriors lost, but at the same time, like, as a basketball fan, I wouldn't necessarily give that up just from a purely, purely entertainment standpoint. And so now to see these guys square off again for the third time, it's going to be great. And you know, and but that's also like the inner troll in me is hoping that they sweep them and win by 35 points every game. And then it's just like, and like KD is named, you know, MVP. And he gets up on stage and just like insults Ohio or something like that. Like, it, you know, just like makes some like reference to November 8th or something. And it, well, like it would just
to go great. Back to your, I mean, the first point that you were making there too, is that, that like the Warriors have this grander opportunity to, like, you know, win a whole bunch because they're going to have their team back. And that's what it seems. It seems like Kevin Durant wants to sign here. Everything is always pointed to Steph re-signing for tons of money. And you know, they might have a $150 million payroll in a couple of years, or, you know, even higher potentially. You know, this is kind of, it's not necessarily the start of the, like, the storyline for the Warriors, not necessarily the beginning of where they're going to be, but, like, I mean, it really depends on how long they go and what kind of success they have. But it does kind of feel, and this isn't fair, but it's starting to feel like, you know, we are beyond the apex of the LeBron James saga, you know? And so that's why we're starting to, like, we're talking about him a lot, because we're starting to put put him in context of history, because we're not going to have that much more time with him playing. He might play till he's 50 because he's a robot, but, you know, he's got how many, seven straight finals he's gone to? Like, how many games?
Yeah, seven straight, eight overall. Yeah.
You know, I mean, how much longer is it going to?
I think, like, he's 100 minutes in his career total less than than Michael at this point or something.
That's insane.
Like, he's going to pass him in the next like couple games or something.
Right. And he can, and he's still the best player in the world, right? Like, he's going to have, you know, a little bit longer of like being this great player, that like this dominant player in the world. And then, you know, he can change his game and still be a really, really good, successful player in other ways, you know, going forward, being a leader and, you know, probably playing when he's 38. But like, by then we'll already have kind of, written that saga, right? It'll be done. We know what he is, what he can accomplish, regardless of whether the Cavs win this championship or not. Like, they have an excuse to lose is because the Warriors are a better team. Like, there's not really.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure. And, you know, again, we've written LeBron off so many times, including last year when they went down 3-1. But I'm not sure if I see him. If this Warriors team sticks together and, you know, if all the other teams in the league get better and the Celtics draft Markelle Fultz, and if they stay that course and, you know, maybe they get Jimmy Butler or whatever happens, like, it's. I'm not sure if I see LeBron winning another championship. Although I could definitely see him going to like another three or four finals in a row. Right. But
I mean,
honestly, dude, like, I would not be surprised if 3 years from now we're talking about Warriors versus Cavs, like volume six, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, that's a thing that definitely could happen.
Or we're talking about Warriors versus Celtics and LeBron has managed to join Boston. Like, I wouldn't be surprised about that either. I swear to God, like, why not?
I don't think he's ever leaving Cleveland again.
Yeah.
I think that he understands, like, cause listen, man, listen how good it is for him right now. Right. He was the pariah. He was the villain of the NBA when he went to Miami, and now he's the beloved homegrown son again. He's finally, for the first time in his entire career, he's like this beloved figure in the NBA, because all of the jackasses who have these stupid ass hot takes have finally found somebody else to land their anger juice against, which is Kevin Durant and the Warriors. So, I mean,
I don't
now,
know. I could see him at like age 37 still playing, but like it's kind of done for the Cavs, and they're paying him like $45 million a year, and they're like, "You know what? We can't do this anymore." And so he goes to the Clippers. You know, it's only a matter of time. All over the hill players get signed by Doc Rivers.
If he was going to go anywhere, I think like at the very end of his career, I think that he would go to the Lakers.
Well, the Lakers are the new Clippers, so.
Yeah, that's true. But anyways, I mean, again, like it's, you know, it's impossible to predict what's going to happen. But at the same time, I think that I wouldn't be surprised if he doesn't ever win another championship. But at the same time, he's only 32. And I, as somebody who just turned 31, like 3 days ago, I would like to imagine that he has a good amount of like vitality left in his body. Just if only for like personal reasons.
You know, I'm 34 and I have none more. I'm so washed. It's just done. So I have no faith. Like, I don't think that anybody can like even, you know, run down the block anymore.
Yeah, but he's also been doing like cryogenic freezing and like going to Germany and is also super high on PEDs right now. So,
right.
You know, it's facts. It's facts. Yeah. So, I mean, if anybody was going to do it, I feel like it would be him. I mean, you know, freaking Jason Kidd played until he was 40, right? Or something.
Yeah, 39, yes. It's super late.
I mean, he was on the Knicks, and then he stopped, and then he, like, literally was coaching the Nets the next year, basically. So,
like,
I could
see LeBron, like evolving to, you know, a high post center, you know? Like,
so, here's actually...
I'll just be Arvydas Sabonis.
Here's what's going to happen. All right, I'm going to call it now. You heard it here first on Golden State of Mindcast with Ivan and Brad. Is that somehow LeBron is going to accrue a shit ton of money, which he already has, and then basically he's going to find a team. Maybe it's like the Orlando Magic. Maybe it's some team that is desperate for new ownership, and he's going to buy that team while he's still playing, and then he's going to become owner, coach, player.
Yeah.
And it's going to be this like weird, unprecedented thing. And like, maybe that only happens in Orlando because Florida is fucked up and like only the most weirdest, most fucked up things happen in Florida. But like, I could definitely see like him owning coaching and playing on the Magic at age like 41 and a half. What do you think about that?
I see it. Well, isn't there, there's a rule against player coaches right now, isn't there?
I have no idea. I should know this, but I mean, why would that, why would they do that? I feel like if there was such a rule, and there probably is, and I just obviously don't know the game of basketball well enough to know that there's such a rule, but that like Adam Silver is going to be like, yeah, dude, we're going to sell hella tickets. Let's do it. And then like rescind that rule. And they're going to just like sign a new TV deal with like Hulu or whoever the hell is running the internet at that point. And just like sign like some weird ass LeBron James owner coach player Hulu live streaming Twitter deal.
After the league is going to take over ownership of the Magic or some other team that's run super poorly, and then LeBron's going to buy it off. He's going to buy it off the league and say like, here are my conditions. Like, I'm going to be a coach.
It's going to be great.
I'm with it. I'm with it. I'm totally down.
And he'll play like the he'll be like he'll be coaching, but he'll just run point and like not ever go in the paint and just like facilitate from the top of the key.
Yell at people. Yeah. And then meanwhile, the Warriors will be over here winning championships, and everybody will be still complaining about now.
Yeah, he'll have David Blatt as his second lead assistant. He won't even be his main lead assistant. He'll like designate him as a second lead assistant just because he's so petty.
It's good. Yeah, that's part of the terms of the conditions of the sale. Like, Blatt has to be on the coaching bench. Oh man. All right. Well, we've gone astray. Let's call it here. Game one is on Thursday. We'll try to pick up the pace on our podcast over the next couple weeks, if it even goes a couple weeks, if you know what I mean.
Arrogant.
Listen, it's fun. It's fun to be arrogant sometimes about this team.
That's kind of how I'm feeling though. Is like if everybody's gonna hate on the Warriors and the Warriors are this like super team, I just have totally turned heel. And like basically all of the things I've been writing have just been like, well, screw it. Like if you guys hate us, then I'm just gonna just literally bathe in your hatred. And my articles are just gonna be like so obtuse and just like so over the top.
You gotta do.
Like, yeah. So, anyways, if you were wondering why maybe my articles have been really insufferable for the last month, that's why.
And if the Warriors win game one by 20 points, they're going to get worse. Those articles are going to get worse.
Only going to get worse.
It's only downhill from here for us. Hopefully not for the Warriors. You can follow Bram on Twitter at Bram Kinchelo. Follow me at Ivan B.E. Follow Golden State of Mind at Unstoppable Baby. Be sure to tune in to goldenstateofmind.com for a crazy ton of coverage for the finals. We got so many writers right now that are so good. So looking forward to that. We'll talk to you sometime after game one coming up on Thursday. That's all the time we have for. Thanks for listening to Golden State of Mind.